think we can hear just fine. We got.
Can you hear?
Whoa.
Test.
Yeah.
Test.
Can move a little closer.
Okay.
That'll work fine. Okay.
So you're good to film?
Yeah.
What is it? Oh, some static?
Yeah. It's cutting out.
Is that one on?
Yeah, this one's on.
Okay.
Is it working?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
You see? Yeah?
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay.
Great. Well, thank you, sir, for joining us.
You're very welcome.
Okay.
As I said, my name is Max Krockmall, and I'm with Duke University. Can you just tell us your name and birth date, age, for the so we get it down right?
Right. My name is Willie Blue. I was born in Tallahatchie County on April 13th, 1939. 3 days ago, I turned 71.
Well, happy birthday.
God bless you.
Okay, Tallahatchie County, were you raised there as well?
Born and raised there. When Emmett Till was murdered at 14, I was 15.
Uh-huh. Did that have a big effect?
Oh, it had a tremendous effect. First, you know, people were in shock because they just couldn't believe people would murder a 14-year-old child. And the second shock came when the sheriff, Clarence Strider, mm-hmm. At the trial stood on the courthouse square and said that no white person is going to get convicted for killing Lene in Mississippi.
Mm-hmm.
He was correct.
How did you hear the news?
We had radio, television, and then word of mouth back then.
Uh-huh.
The grapevine was working.
Uh-huh. Now, did you have much contact with white folks coming up?
I tried not to, but it was inevitable. I mean, they had control over your life, and they had control over your livelihood. They had control over just about everything. So it was a real challenge to avoid them.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Did your folks work on the farm?
No, my mother was a beautician. My father was a sharecropper.
Mm-hmm.
When he went into the Navy in World War II, he got out, came back, and went back to sharecropping. And he worked 1 year, and he made $80. And he said, before I kill somebody, I just take this $80 and move away. He went to St. Louis, got him a job on the Cadillac assembly line at Fisher Body.
Oh, really?
Yes.
He joined the union there?
Yes. Have to be in the union to work there.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Was that a good thing or not?
Then it was a good thing because if you wasn't in the union, you couldn't get paid.
Uh-huh.
Now it's a little different, you know. You might not get the job because of the union.
Uh-huh.
Then when they first started off in the union business, it was a great thing because black people or minority people, you had no way of getting paid.
Mm-hmm. So did they come back to Mississippi or were you raised by someone else?
No, my father and my mother divorced and he moved to St. Louis and I stayed in Mississippi and they had an agreement. I went to school in Mississippi 1 year and I went to school in St. Louis 1 year.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
What was the, I mean, were the racial dynamics different or the same? Like what was race like in St. Louis?
The race issue was very prevalent. The only problems you would have in St. Louis is if you went out of your own neighborhood. As long as you stayed in your own neighborhood, no problem.
Mm-hmm. But in Mississippi, you ran into
In Mississippi, everybody controls you. What are you doing walking? Where are you going? You know, who do you work for?
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't respond favorably to them, you know, it causes you problems.
Uh-huh. And what town was your mom's
Charleston,
working in?
Charleston, old town. It's the biggest town in Tallahatchie County.
Okay.
Tallahatchie County has two county seats, one on the west side, which is Sumner,
mm-hmm.
and the other in Charleston, which is on the east side.
Okay. So, did you grow up in a religious family? Did you go to church?
Yeah, everybody, you can't be black in Mississippi and not be a Baptist, at
uh-huh.
least. But they had a lot of Methodists, but mostly Baptists.
Mm-hmm.
And that was just the way it is. You, it was ingrained in you. Mm-hmm. When there's a thunderstorm, you get in the corner and be quiet. God's working. Mm-hmm. When he finishes, then you can go back out and play. It was just bred into you.
Right. So what made you get involved with the movement?
When I got out of the Navy in 60, it was, it seemed like it was worse, you know. When you go away from something for 4 years and you come back to it, it looked like it's worse.
Where'd you go?
I was in the Navy. Yeah. I was in the Pacific Theater. Okay. I left California, went to, my tour of duty was Hawaii first, Guam, the Philippines, Hong Kong, Japan. Mm-hmm. Our home port was in Japan, Yokosuka, Japan.
Okay.
And that was home port while 18 months over there.
And you got back in 60 or 61?
60. And I got out in April of 60. When I turned, I went in at 17. When I turned 21, just before I was 21, I was out. I was a veteran of the military before I was 21.
Okay. So you came back to Mississippi and you thought things were worse. Even.
Yeah, and why I got into the movement after I was discharged, I had 1 year of unemployment security to draw. I was getting $30 a week, and these people insisted that I work for $3 a day, which translates into $15 a week.
Doing what?
Chopping cotton. And I refused to do it. And they said, you can't stay here. You're gonna have to leave if you don't adhere to the rules. And a lady from the NAACP, she worked at the funeral home, and she pulled me aside and she said, I heard about some guys, some freedom riders down in Greenwood. Things are getting rough for you, and I keep hearing things, they're gonna get you. You might need to go down there and see what's up with them. Mm-hmm. And I went to Greenwood. I met Bob Moses. Rest is history.
Well, tell us a little bit of that story. What did Bob? What happened when you met Bob?
Well, I got baptized under fire. Jimmy Travis, this was the early part in the spring of 63. Jimmy Travis had just got shot. He was Bob's driver. Bob couldn't drive a car when he first came to Mississippi.
He's from New York.
Right, but he didn't know nothing about driving a car. Yeah. So Jimmy was, you know, kind of official, unofficial driver for Bob and the leadership. So when he got shot, I walked in. I was the oldest one. I was 22. Had a driver's license, knew my way around. They said, well, okay, you're a driver. Pick up Harry Belafonte at the airport. Mm-hmm. Got ran off almost, you know. Harry gives me credit for saving his life. The book by Taylor Branch, Pillars of Fire. Uh-huh. He devoted a whole page to my introduction into the movement on page 450. Okay. In that book.
And I think you mentioned it briefly the other day.
Right. It's a good book.
You went to Freedom School.
That was my rite of passage. Bob insisted on it. Everybody that wants to be in the movement, you know, how you gonna call yourself a freedom fighter? You don't even know what the Emancipation Proclamation is, mm-hmm. or how it got to be that way. And that was my rite of passage. And I think we have neglected one of our most powerful tools. To me, that was the most powerful influence in my life, that Freedom School. I learned who I was, where I come from, and how I got to be in this terrible situation. Freedom School taught me that. And
who was your teacher?
Bob Moses and Frank Smith. God bless both of them.
Okay. So you become the driver and you had this other incident. But there's a couple of years missing there. What happened in between?
Well, I spent a lot of time, you know, just on my own, not really wanting to be bothered with any of it. I just wanted to be above the whole thing.
Okay.
You know, all I wanted was just to be left alone. All I wanted to do was go put my application in at the post office, get me a job that I can retire with, and nobody hassle me. And the civil rights movement would never have known me if they hadn't kept hassling me.
So they didn't give you a job?
They didn't give me nothing but a hard time. They threw my application in the garbage while I was standing there looking. Wow. I spent an hour filling it out, all in every, crossing every T and dotting every I. And when I finished and had it in the garbage. Huh. So now, if this kind of thing don't happen to me, the civil rights world would never have known me.
All right. So you went to freedom school and you learned who you were.
Yes.
What was that? What'd you learn?
I learned that me and all of my generation, we are constitutional people under the Constitution of the United States of America. We are the constitutional people, mm-hmm. Black, like me, my age at that time, in the early 20s, mm-hmm. and the right to vote was absolutely essential to being a citizen. You know, all of us was complaining about not being born here in this country and not being a citizen, can't even vote. We're not even citizens of our own country. Mm-hmm. Very frustrating. And that's where the fight started.
So I realized
mm-hmm. that, yes, nothing is going to be easy and nobody's going to give me anything. I have no inalienable rights. Mm-hmm. I have to fight for everything I'm going to get. Mm-hmm. I learned that in freedom school.
You told me earlier they paid you, what, $17?
$17.50 a week.
Okay.
For 3 years. SNCC. That was the SNCC payroll. We didn't have no money, which goes to show you a few people can do some great things with no money. Mm-hmm. It proves it. We didn't have any money, but we had the moral high ground.
Well, you got support from people other ways.
Right. We had the moral high ground because America was treating us worse than a stepchild mm-hmm. in a family. We were worse. We didn't even get to come in the house, much less be a part of the family. We wasn't even allowed in. Mm-hmm.
So you started in 63. Did you start working on the freedom vote right away?
No. This came in the summer project. Bob, the leadership of SNCC, had decided that we were going to call students from every university in this country, east, west of the Mississippi, mm-hmm. east or west, that want to come here. Illiteracy was a huge problem in Mississippi. I mean, they didn't want you to go to school. You don't need to know how to go to school to pick cotton.
Right.
So my experience in school was, you know, it was devastating. All the books that we got came from the white school after they had the backs were off and pages were missing and all marked up like that. This is what we had to learn from. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's demoralizing. And I didn't know it, but all of that stuff had built up in me. And when they said, we don't care about you being a military veteran and that you're getting unemployment, if you're gonna stay in this is the system that you have to live by here. Well, it pissed me off, you know. But the first time I got pissed.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, what was the first thing you did for SNCC?
Pick up Harry Belafonte.
Right away. Huh?
What
happened afterwards? You got chased out of there?
No. The Greenwood movement after that.
With Mr. Belafonte, what happened with him?
Well, it was bump and run. They were in the front car, and I was bringing up the rear. And the Klan was just slamming into the back of the car, back and forth. So we played bump and run for a couple of miles. And then they broke it off. Just like they started, it broke off like that. Mm-hmm. I was happy. Nobody got hurt.
Right. It is a trial by fire.
Yeah. And after that, you know.
So you went to Greenwood?
I stayed in Greenwood. That was in Greenwood.
Okay.
That was in Greenwood. That's where it happened. Mm-hmm. And I stayed there, and then we changed logistically. We decided it would be better if we went in state capital, and you know, we could function better from the Mississippi Democratic Freedom Party, mm-hmm. which eventually turned into COFO, mm-hmm. which now. But it started off SNCC and CORE.
Mm-hmm.
Bob Moses and Dave Dennis.
Mm-hmm.
Dave Dennis headed CORE, Bob SNCC.
Mm-hmm.
We was in the same office. We couldn't tell one from the other.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where MFDP came from. That's where COFO came from.
So did you go to the Jackson office or did you stay?
Yes, I went to the Jackson office and I stayed. I left when Head Start, people really didn't give much credence. I think that's how we got it in action, because nobody was really paying much attention. We had two things going, Head Start and voter registration.
Mm-hmm.
The focus was more on voter registration, which took the focus off of Head Start, which is why I think it was so easy to get it. And when people saw what it was, they were amazed.
Mm-hmm.
But nobody had really paid it any attention. Kind of like, you know, no, we just gonna stick this in here just for, and nobody really paid it any attention. But now, for the first time in the history of Mississippi, blacks, you go to school with a full stomach, and they have teachers that are going to teach them not according to the rules of the state of how you gotta pass this test, but each child get to learn on their own level.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's the best thing ever happened to Mississippi outside the Voting Rights Act.
Mm-hmm. So when the Freedom Summer Project happened, were you supervising field staff or what were you doing?
No, I had a lot of trouble with white people.
Mm-hmm.
At that time, I was getting arrested just for stepping off the curb. And Bob saw an opportunity. We didn't have a SNCC photographer.
Mm-hmm.
That was a grassroots native of Mississippi. And he sent me to New York for film training and motion pictures to do documentary stuff. And I went to New York, Cal Penny Films,
mm-hmm.
and that's where I studied, and under Pete Smollett and some other people. And I came back home the day I came back to Mississippi, the day that they discovered the bodies.
Mm.
That's when I left New York coming back. And the summer project was over. But I had done something meaningful by,
mm-hmm.
you know, at least they had a photographer.
Right. So did you take that skill on the road then? Did you?
Yes. Back then, 35 millimeter movie camera, you get 3 minutes on a roll of film.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to take it out and keep it in the dark
right.
and change the film. And each roll of film, I think back then, was $9 and some change.
Ooh.
In 60.
Yeah.
That was a lot of money.
That's half your week's salary.
Yes.
Right.
So the money all was designated for that. Something always happens to prioritize.
Mm-hmm.
This is more important than this. We had to do it that
sure.
way. Yeah. So in the end, Sam Block, well, in the end, all of those cameras were stolen that I had, you know, people had given me in New York. And
was that moment when Sam had to flee the office?
Well, I don't want to talk about Sam. This
okay.
is about me. Yeah.
Well, I guess give me, all right, that's fine. What, I mean, so when did you leave Greenwood?
I forget the day, but we left Greenwood, everybody left Greenwood and went to Jackson.
Okay.
That was, I guess that was, yeah, the fall, winter, coming up on winter in late 63, going into 64.
Okay. Did you have, I'm sure you did, but what kinds of experiences did you have with white terrorism the time you were there?
Oh man, it was so common. I mean, you know, you don't even get to a place where you don't even, you know.
Can you remember a particular incident that
struck
you?
During that summer project where Aaron Henry and Dr. Ed King from Tougaloo was running for mayor. See, Ross Barnett had told, he had got on the TV, on the news, and said, it's these outside agitators that's causing trouble. Mm-hmm. Our niggas, they just singing and they're happy. And thus, from that came the mock election, mm-hmm. to prove that we really do want to vote. Mm-hmm. And my assignment was in Batesville. They put us in different districts. It was so few of us. Frank Smith was in charge of that district, and he was in Holly Springs at Rust College, but I was in Batesville. And at a mass meeting, we have mass meetings, you know, we call people in and try and talk them into getting registered. Mm-hmm. And that night, the church was just packed. People, I think Jim Fulman was supposed to come. And people were anxious, just waiting. And somebody said, hey, something going on outside. And I went outside. The pastor of the church, about 90 years old, they put him in the car. It was five white guys, put him in the back seat of the car. And when I got there, I just opened the door and told him to get out. And the guy was driving the car. His name, he told me, my name is Mr. Sullivan, and these my six brothers. Stuck it right there. And what saved my life, it's hard for me to tell, I don't tell this story often. When the people in the church saw that, panic, fled. Everybody just fled. And Mr. Sullivan and the six brothers, they just gave me a smile, put his gun away and left. He had won. Didn't have to shoot me. My own people had fled. That saved my life. Mm. So it's not something I talk about a lot.
Wow.
So them kind of incidents, I just prefer not to talk about. This is the first time I've told this on camera.
Well, thank you for sharing. Yeah. What do you think were some of the most pivotal events, the most important things that happened in your SNCC years?
The Voting Rights Act, mission accomplished. Mm-hmm. Not like George Bush.
Right, like we were just talking in here.
Yeah, that was mission accomplished. And to SNCC, after that, SNCC disbanded. Mm-hmm. Mission accomplished. We completed what we had accomplished, what we set out to do on that particular front. Wasn't a need for SNCC anymore. So we thought.
Okay, so what was next? What was left over? What did you forget about?
We forgot about what got us where we are. The very basic Constitution. What is the Emancipation Proclamation? Even unto this day, our people don't understand the significance of the Emancipation Proclamation. We are constitutional people. We're the only people on the planet that's constitutional people. The Constitution made us, okay? We don't know that. Most of our people don't know that. Most of America don't know that. Mm-hmm. And that's my mission, is to make especially our young people know who they are. And I don't think they can know who they are if they don't know what the Emancipation Proclamation is. And I've got to be that way.
So is it fair to say you think we got the right to vote, but didn't use it?
We got the right to vote, and we used it. We got more elected officials in the state of Mississippi than any other state.
Right.
But we have forgotten why. Why are we like we are? And Freedom School taught me that.
So we don't act like free citizens.
Hey, now, see? And Belafonte hit on it over there. We got the hip hop out of this generation of hip hoppers, the most powerful movement, Spanish hip hoppers, Mexican, Japanese, Australian, everybody's hip hopping. But only us degenerate our women, call them hoes, because the establishment found out the same thing that the rappers do, that there's a gold mine here in this rap. And the lyrics started to change, and now women start to be the going, you know, dope and blibbity-blabbity. And that's where it is now. And that's our mission. We should change that. We have to. Because they do it. Because they don't know who they are. Simple as that. They need to go to Freedom School. And that one powerful weapon that we had from the beginning, we have neglected it. We have just let it go. And consequently, our young people don't know who they are. Simple as that. The simplest, the most simplest strategies turn out to be the best in terms of a movement and the people moving.
Mm-hmm.
Head Start and the Voting Rights Act. And people still, they got that and they forgot about why did we need a Voting Rights Act in the first place.
So tell me more about Head Start. Where did it come from?
Bob Moses.
How did that happen?
He's a genius. He looked at this Mississippi school system and he said, no wonder our kids are dropping out about 1,000 every year and not interested. They're sitting up in there hungry, sitting up in there looking in books that has no cover, the backs off them, and they're hungry. And the most, he emphasized the most important thing about Head Start, these kids get a hot meal. Now they're ready to learn. He's a genius. Nobody ever thought of that. Such a simple thing turned into be the most important thing. And we got to get Head Start is up, running, doing well. Freedom School, people like to talk about it as something that used to be, something that put me over, that made me understand who I was. But what about these kids that are being born every day? How are they gonna know who they are?
So you said you're working on that?
Before I leave this world, I wanna see a Freedom School, at least one in every city in this country. And it should be in every school, but I know the establishment is not gonna pay for that one.
Well,
that sets too many people free.
Right.
And they don't want you to be, they don't want you to be free no more than they do me.
Mm-hmm.
But they pit you against me, pit us against each other. I'm saying poor whites, poor blacks. That's mm-hmm. you. I don't know that you're poor. I don't know.
Yeah,
that
I'm you, but working,
I don't, but I'm
working
just,
my way out.
But that's what they do. They pit us together, against each other, and they go off with the money, and we stay poor, and our kids don't know who they are and how they got to be like that.
Mm-hmm.
And their kids are off to Duke, off to the mainstream America, good life. And our kids don't, saying, how come we can't get there? Because they can't see who they are and how they got where they are. And I think Freedom School is the key. That's what I believe. And before I leave this world, I'm going to be fighting for that.
Well, just real quick before we're done then, let's go back to, you said that you had trouble dealing with whites, and so in that period, what was your impression of race relations within the movement, within SNCC?
I was amazed that it was so many black people were so intelligent, had so much education. It made me feel...
So many white people?
Black guys, black, like Bob Moses.
Okay.
But whites too, came too, but, you know, education was denied for a purpose.
Mm-hmm.
See, you can't, as strong as an elephant is, if he don't know how strong he is, you can keep on making him jump through the hoop.
Because
he don't know how strong he really is.
But how did whites and blacks get along within SNCC from what you could tell?
It was what happened in SNCC after during the summer project. It was just a lot of people came, and most of them were white. And it came a point at a meeting that how are we going to deal with this problem? because we were being put up in the black community. Black community was sympathetic to us. Mm-hmm. We could come in, we could sit down at the table and eat. White people who have had their foot on your neck all your life, you say, hey, why are you bringing them with you? So it got to be a little testy, and things started to happen. And somebody, me one, said, well, hey, it's enough room. White kids, it's time white kids go into the white community. Tell them, we don't want to marry your dating daughter. We just want to vote. We don't want to come to dinner. We just want to vote. And from that, I think we worked it out. And we still cool. And our white friends, we love them. Because we could not have done what we've done without them. Mm-hmm. But you can see why where our problem was coming from on that. So,
what were your impressions of the people you were trying to organize, the people you were trying to get to go register? What, in your mind, I mean, you're from there.
Fear, the fear. See, I know people who's just talking about joining the NAACP, just having an NAACP where our kids can learn citizenship and the responsibilities of being a citizen. I know one of my friends, one of my classmates, his father's house was burned down. He was ran out of town, had to move to Chicago. Mm-hmm. And he would have been destitute if it hadn't been for Mose Allison's father in Tallahatchie County, who gave him a fair price for his land. And he moved to Chicago and bought an apartment building. And his family's there now. I got a home in Chicago with him because of that. They were trying to get their crops out of the field. Blacks were forbidden to help them. I helped them. I was the only one, high school kid, that went down there and helped pull corn, helped them get it all in the barn, helped them get it. I have a home with them anytime I go to Chicago.
So you said the SNCC kind of died after the Voting Rights Act?
No, not dead. Just went doing other things.
Okay.
You know.
What kinds of other things?
Well, social issues, political issues, all over the place. It's always a fight. Mm-hmm. And
so, what did you start working on after that?
I went to Chicago, to the Chicago Area Friends of SNCC, and I worked with Al Raby, and for an organization called the Coordinating Council of Community Organizations. Mm-hmm. I was liaison between the civil rights groups and the community groups, and. It's pretty much the same thing, you know. Who are you? Where is your power? Mm-hmm. And the power is in the vote, really. And the South Side of Chicago back at that time, it was not any different from Mississippi. The only difference was you can get paid in Chicago. You can't go over there in Mayor Daley's neighborhood, but as long as you stay in your own neighborhood, they don't care if you're a millionaire. Just stay over there, be a millionaire. Can't come in our neighborhood. That was the difference. Mm-hmm. Whereas Mississippi, everybody in the same neighborhood. White, black live next door to each other. Mm-hmm. But I needed, if I had a car at all, it had to be an old car. It can't be newer than your car. Mm-hmm. I can't dress better than you. I can't ride in a car better than your car. That kind of oppression. It was terrible. Mm-hmm. Couldn't even go fishing, go hunting. My father wasn't allowed to shoot a deer. That's for white people. Mm-hmm. I want to go fishing. I can't catch a crappie where it's, back then they call them white perch. Mm-hmm. It's a game fish. Mm-hmm. Can't be bought in the store. You have to catch it. Couldn't catch them. If they saw me, they'd take them. That's how bad it was. Mm-hmm. A fish, you know. But that's how bad it was. So, always work to be done. And I say that because the strong is always going to take advantage of the weak. Mm-hmm. That's why Jesus came on the planet. That was his mission. because the priests all eating good and fat, and God's babies down here starving. Pissed him off real bad. So,
so did you stay in Chicago for a while, or did you go back to Mississippi?
Yeah, I stayed in Chicago 24 years, but I was back and forth all the time, back and forth to Mississippi.
So do you have a place in Mississippi now, too?
Yeah, I live there. I'm a student at Jackson State. Uh-huh. I spent a lot of time out on the corner begging people to go back to school. Why are you standing out here drinking wine when they paying you to go to school? Mm-hmm. They don't believe me. They don't believe you get paid to go to school. Mm-hmm. And I said, I'm going to show you. So I applied for the grant. I got the money, and I'm in class.
What are you studying?
Journalism. I want to tell this whole story my way.
Had you ever been to school before, to college?
I went to Tupelo, but that was during the Civil Rights Movement. That was doing the work study project. That's another one of Bob's. To get people into go work study. Hmm. That was the introduction to almost a free college education. Mm-hmm. We'll mow the yard, we'll wash the windows, whatever, just let us stay. It worked for a lot of people. I was too busy, 23 years old. In 63, I had a 53 Mercury, and I was 23. Going on 24, shit, man, women never look so good.
You got better things to do.
Right.
Yeah. Well, this was one other question I was going to ask you, was how did you sustain yourself? Maybe that's related.
1750 a week. I don't want to talk about.
What about spiritually?
Let me tell you something. I will tell you this. Before 1965, along with the Voting Rights Act, came legalized liquor. Before that, bootleg whiskey was number one cash crop in Mississippi. Hmm. So if you knew how to, you could make a living if you knew how. If you, mm-hmm. you just could not do it openly. And if you made some money, don't buy a new car, buy 5-6 year old car. Mm-hmm. And you can survive. They'll let you live. Buy a new car, you're going to jail. Because you're saying, hey, I'm bucking the system. And I'm succeeding. Mm-hmm. Off your ass, go to jail. Right quick. So.
Okay, well, how about the spiritual? How'd you keep going spiritually?
Well.
Or how did you convince yourself to keep fighting?
Well, it wasn't a matter of convincing myself. It's always another fight. And they're going to bring it to me. They're going to bring it to us. Like they're doing now. The Voting Rights Act, mm-hmm. they're trying to repeal it. So they keep bringing the fight to us. Mm-hmm. They keep bringing it back. So the fight, it continues. They're not going to just leave us alone. Uh-huh. They ain't going to do that. So thus, we got to keep going.
So what do you think were the most important legacy here? I mean, we're talking, everyone's here reminiscing. What's the big legacy or big lessons of the Civil Rights Movement?
Well, if I haven't said it, I think the Civil Rights Movement saved my life. I was not going to cooperate. And the day that I thought I was going to die and everybody else said, get out of town, was the day the plantation owner said, hey, you know better than any other nigga around here. You gonna do what they do or else you. And I told him, I got no cotton, I got no land, I got no grass, I got no fucking hope. Get the fuck away from me. I had to leave, full dark. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the fight comes to me. I don't have to pick no fight.
Okay. Well, do you have anything else you want to add?
No. If you're happy with the interview.
I mean, I could talk to you all day.
All day I could too, but we, yeah. I keep eyeing the door.
Okay. Well, we'll stop this. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
And before you go, I just got to get you to fill out a form or two because of my lawyers.
Okay.
And I guess I should stop this. I don't know if I ever started that. I did. Someone did.